Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 282. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
I'm still reeling from last night's heartbreaking Dodger loss.
Oh, Graham Thickens.
Hey, is that a banjo I'm hearing there?
It's a lot of things.
Yeah, I thought he was going to say, are you just glad to see me?
No. And that's Phil Wilson. How you doing?
Hello.
It sounds like we just dropped into a Woody Allen movie.
It is very, very good. Yes,
we may have. And you know, Tim, what is the nature of reality? Because are we in the Matrix or are we, should we talk about that for a while? No, never mind. Because we have lots of great things. In fact, we have our fabulous new Mini Analytics board member with us, Graham Thickens.
Freshly minted,
who's going to give us a recap of Mini Analytics. How did it go? How many people?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, we had a great event on Tuesday. It was the first marketing analytics event that the organization has sponsored. And if you're not familiar with Mini Analytics, it is a community of folks in big data and data analytics of all sorts. It's close to 4,000 now in the database. It's not really a membership organization. I often describe it as just sort of a meetup group on steroids. It's been going on goes back actually over a decade, started out as a user group with 9 or 10 people meeting at the Southdale Library, I guess. And that was way before my day, but I got involved in it a few years ago, helping out with events and volunteering and snagging some speakers for previous events. But this year they wanted to do one focused in marketing, and they tapped myself and Lizzie Wilkins to co-organize it. She's a data scientist at an agency by the name of Nina Hale in Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah.
I suppose as a way to throw us a bone, they decided to name us board members too, because they knew how darn much work it was to put one of these things on.
And the fact that you'd chase down that bone and you'd bury it and hang on to it.
Yeah, there you go. But anyway, we knocked it out of the park, I think. I say humbly and modestly, because we had more than 400 register or wait list for the event. And being a free sponsor support event, there's always a certain amount of no-shows, but I think we had something close to 350. We packed Worrell Design, which turned out to be a great venue for an event like this. This was the biggest one they'd done there. And we filled two big rooms, including their huge photo studio, which is like an airplane hangar. But there'll be photos going up on the site, and there already are some up there. And we attracted 20 speakers, and I counted 7 of them were from out of town that I managed to recruit in, including a marvelous keynoter who has a new book called The Marketing Performance Blueprint. So we have it. We have it all on video, and we have the presenters' slideshows as well that we're going to be posting up on minianalytics.org. So,
I would like to put a link in the show notes, because on their sidebar on the blog where they're talking about MAMA MN, the event, mm-hmm. is your Big Data in the Wild Flipboard.
Oh, yeah.
Magazine. So,
yeah, that was something that I just did for the heck of it about a year ago. And
but now Dan Atkins is participating, who's one of the board members too, and founders of Analytics.
Yeah, he's really the man, you know, and one of 3 co-founders. Yeah, I invited him to be a contributor to that a while back. And we have more than 12,000 readers of that now. So that's kind of fun. And I had one of my speakers was Joe Shriver speaking about mobile analytics, and I mentioned that I use their little Ad-A-Go-Go mobile ad platform to try to get subscribers early on to my magazine, you know, when it had like 10 subscribers, and I used his platform to boost that up to about 100. And then you probably heard me talk about this before. And then somehow Flipboard featured it as one of their top picks. And then, you know, the subscribers really, really started going up. But yeah, it's now on the Mini Analytics site. They just started a new WordPress site, as you can see. Yep. So we've got a lot of blog posts and stuff up there. Yeah, lots of fun.
And then you also went to the Minnesota Venture Conference, right?
Yeah, the Minnesota Venture and Finance Conference in its 28th year.
Now run by the Minnesota High Tech Association.
Yeah, and I think they did a fine job in taking it over, but they had a lot of guidance from Dan Carr, of course, and his former organization. But I'd say they pulled it off nicely. It looked and felt much like the last one I attended a few years ago there at the convention center. And I'd say it drew about as many. I didn't get a count, but it seems to me that they're usually in the 300 to 400 range. I think I've been to probably 12 or 14 of these things over the years, but I hadn't been for a while. We had a few blogger press people there. Neil St. Anthony was there from the Tribune and Kathy Grayson from the Business Journal. I didn't see any others, but I managed to be able to do some tweeting. Was too busy to write a blog post, unfortunately, but I'd say it was a good event. You know, a lot of the same kind of stuff, you know, talking about the strengths of Minnesota in the startup business and the funding community and you know, a lot about the dearth of venture capital here, you know, a lot of the same old, yeah. You know. But I'll tell you, I don't know if you saw my tweets. There were some new faces there. How about the new CEO of Digital River, Dobson?
David, yeah, Dobson. I saw your tweet. Yeah, I saw the tweet.
Yeah, he had some good things to say, and it's refreshing to hear how that company is taking on a new life, reaching out, doing more partnerships, and being more open, and wanting to obviously be more active, not just in the e-commerce world in general, but in the community too, I think. And so that was kind of one highlight for me. And then there were some wonderful 7-minute presentations from startups. Probably the most impressive of which is This Clicks, you know, with the When I Work app. Those guys are just killing it, you know. One of a couple of startups locally that are killing it lately. Lead Pages being the other one, which spoke at our Mini Analytics event. So those were some of the highlights, and I'm glad I went. It was two long days of conferences for me, I'll tell you.
Well, that sounds great. You know, was Dan Carr actually there? Did he?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Yes, he was. And you know, watching over his baby. I mean, it's his legacy. Right. Margaret Anderson Kelleher Anderson did a wonderful job hosting it. And the one strange thing was the lunch speaker was the president of the Minnesota Twins. So I didn't see a real high tech or startup angle there, but well, yes, now I've got it. The Twins are starting all over again. There you go.
Well, but there's also what's really happening that I find really interesting, because I have it's my wife's cousin, first cousin once removed. He's a young man who runs a blog or participates in a blog for the Twins. And it's huge, and the fans are fanatics. I mean, where the word fan comes from.
Oh, yeah.
And are incredibly engaged in social media, and there's a real outreach there, but there's not a lot of analytics, surprisingly. And so yeah, we got all these fans who are following us. Okay, well, who are they, and what are the demographics? And no idea at all.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you would bring up analytics with respect to the to the twins. I, early on in my seeking speakers for the marketing analytics event, I reached out to a developer I know, and Phil knows him too, who's big into the iBeacons thing. And I said, do we have anybody that can talk about like a case history yet on what they're doing? Like, would the twins be using it? And he didn't seem to think there was enough there yet for anybody to really present a case history. But they are working on new technologies like that.
Yep.
Both the twins and the Vikings, I'm sure. I don't follow the twins as close as I follow the Vikings, and I'm following them a lot less now too, but for obvious reasons. But I think the Vikings are really pretty sophisticated in the ways of social media and analytics. But I don't know about the twins.
A consumer alert tonight from Contact 13. Another data breach. This one at
Another data breach.
I understand there's another data breach.
Yeah, there is. There is. Don't go to that page if you're...
Is that right now?
Yeah.
Is that one of the... Did you go to a page where they actually had the autoplay on video?
Yes, they did.
I hate that.
I hate that too.
Oh, God.
It was at TwinCities.com. But yeah, this is about the article about SuperValu is hit with a second data breach.
Oh, okay. So that was a
Cub food stores.
That was a segue. Gotcha. Okay.
An unintentional segue.
An unintentional segue.
What a good one.
So Tim Elliott, why are you not stopping these data breaches locally here?
Well, you know, I just can't get to enough stores to say, you know, you should upgrade that Windows XP system you got there.
That's right. Don't use embedded Windows XP.
You know, because those Russian or Ukrainian hackers are just coming for you. So it's kind of funny, though, that, you know, this is another serious deal that hit Cub Foods, some of the stores north of Minneapolis. But, you know, we're sort of immune to this thing now since there's been so many of these.
Well, and then the article about JP Morgan Chase and their breach hit 76 million households or 73 million households. And yet they have not quantified or identified any usage of compromised data. It's like, okay, whatever. just come on in here. I'll leave my wallet on the front door unlocked. I'll leave my wallet right there. Just come on in.
Wow.
Yeah.
76 million. So is that like the biggest yet, or?
I'm not even keeping score anymore.
Home Depot is the biggest one.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. But, but you know, all these retailers will be upgrading their systems.
Yeah. Well, okay. So the JP Morgan breach is being called the worst known compromise in history.
Oh, okay. Well, they're the new title holders.
Yeah.
I guess the guys at Home Depot are giving the thumbs up to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we're out of there.
Yeah, we're out of there. No, we're no longer the worst.
We're number two. We're number two.
Figure out how to control Ebola, and we're really in good shape. No, I'm kidding.
Was that a virus segue?
Let's not go there.
No.
Yeah. Well,
it's one of those things you just kind of, well, there you go.
I know.
There's another one.
I know. Well, at any rate,
startups.
Ukrainian hacking startups. No, but this article about 10 Minnesota startups picked to compete for that $100K from Steve Case. Mm-hmm. You know, say what you will about Steve Case and what he's doing with these investments and so on, but at the end of the day, it raises the visibility of startups here and the need for capital to get these things in play. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some of the startups we know well, Zipnosis and Retrace Health and Precious Status, and there's a couple on here that I don't know.
75F.
The interesting thing is a lot of these were kind of surprises. They weren't the usual players that you would expect to see here, especially some of the folks that are based out of Cocoa. Some of their stuff did not make the cut. So it was interesting.
And they all tried though, right?
Yes, a lot of them did. Sure.
Okay.
And was it Steve Case himself who picked these, or was there, I suppose, a group of judges that
there was a group of judges. Yeah. Yeah. That, I think the people from Mankato judged, or Madison, one of the other cities judged the entries.
Oh,
Minneapolis, okay. And then Minneapolis judged their entries.
Huh. Yeah.
We got a couple of sort of agricultural related ones. The 75F company is the Minnesota Cup winner out of Mankato.
Right.
You know, you've got some med device stuff. You've got some ag stuff. You've got, you know, it's an interesting, it's kind of an interesting bag of mm-hmm. presentations, but that's happening what Tuesday, I believe. Right.
Yeah. The seventh. Is yep. that yep. Tuesday?
Yeah. Right. Tuesday. It is.
So that should be an interesting day
at the Varsity Theater in Minneapolis.
Oh, that's right. Varsity. Yeah.
So,
and I believe Graham is in the chorus for that. I'm not sure.
he's one of the new choral members.
That's where I met my wife, in front of the Varsity Theater in Dinkytown, you know, just a couple blocks from the fraternity house. And
are you serious? Was this before or after the Dine and Dash?
What's that?
Was this before or after the Dine and Dash at Vesio's?
No, I wasn't at Vesio's. No, we were just walking down the street, shooting the breeze, and ran into sorority girls from Alpha Gam who were at a few blocks from the Phi Gam house. And so I've actually dragged my sons over there. We went to a concert at the Varsity a few years ago, and I dragged my sons along, and I made him stand there and said, okay, right here, this is where I met your mom, right here, you know? So anyway, that's my story of the Varsity Theater.
And you're sticking
to it. So maybe I'll go over there again on Tuesday. Or are the tickets all spoken for, Phil? Do you know?
I don't know. I haven't looked, to tell you the truth. But they were free, so
it's pretty big, especially if we're going to have standing room only, kind of like they do in concerts. You know, it's like shoulder to shoulder, people standing.
Yeah,
so it would hold a lot of people.
I don't know if startup pitches are as compelling as a concert. But.
No, fortunately not. I've heard a number of these already, so
yes, you have.
I don't know whether I'll go, just but maybe for the nostalgia of it, maybe I'll drag the wife over there.
There you go. What a romantic devil you are.
You are.
You're coming to listen to startup pitches. Oh no, I'm not.
And that's where the
dreams,
and
Charlie.
That's where the relationship ended as well as where it started.
Yeah.
That's great. Did you guys see this little app that 3M has put out to virtualize their Post-it notes?
Yeah, you know, I did, and I've been really wrestling with why or if I'd ever want to use this. I mean, it seems interesting. I don't know.
You would be the perfect person for this.
Well, can I tell you something that I've done many, many, many times with consulting clients is taken photos of the whiteboard.
Sure. And why wouldn't you use this?
Because they don't use Post-it notes to lay out concepts and so on. But you know where this would really come into play is
any
project management kinds of things.
I just want you to say project management and software development is keeping the lumber industry alive. So
no, I know. Well, that's exactly where it would come into play. No. Let's put this feature over here. You just rip the Post-it note off and put it over.
That's
yeah.
Right.
So for process flow stuff, project management, all that, it's perfect. But you know, just kind of for run of the mill, I don't know.
You do a lot of facilitation of meetings, don't you, Steve? I mean, you know, where you're up front at the whiteboard kind of thing.
Yeah. A fair amount, but typically I prepare in advance and I'll have handouts, and so people can go through exercises that way and follow along and we cover it that way. But yeah, anyway. Jury's still out.
Correction, Steve is keeping the lumber industry alive with handouts. That's good.
Yeah, right. There you
That's
go.
That's right. It's about the only time I print anything, actually. So we've got a printer, a color printer that I paid about $8,000 for, I don't know, 5 years ago. And sometimes it's not turned on for a week.
Right.
You know, and it's this gorgeous, wonderful, big color HP and color laser. So I think printing's days are over
pretty much. Yeah. All right, somebody else handle the next segue. Come on.
Well, I want to make
speaking
some...
of Amazon.
There you go.
How's
yeah,
that?
We were all kind of wrestling. Well, I'm supposed to be the segue guy, right? Well.
Speaking of Amazon.
Speaking of Amazon and the retailer resuming commissions to Minnesotans.
Yeah, so now we're still post-it notes, right?
Now that we're actually able, you know, they're actually you know, paying money to do business in Minnesota. They're looking for another way to get some more money in Minnesota. So.
Well, you know, here's the thing about being an affiliate. I remember being so excited about the notion of affiliates back in 2004, early 2005, when I had started blogging, and I built a page, and because Leo Laporte had done this from twit.tv at the time, he was still doing the screensavers, I think, then, but I got so excited about it, I built a whole page of Steve's Tech and all the stuff that I had purchased. And I had links to Amazon and a couple of other places. And, I remember, you know, seeing all the page views and people clicking on stuff and yada, yada, and I'm getting really excited about how much money I was going to make. The first quarter I made $23.27.
Nice.
Hey,
nice.
That's pretty good.
That's
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. 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 Figuring the 6 or 7 hours I spent building this thing out, that was not a good ROI. So I've never been too excited about affiliate stuff. I suppose if you've got literally millions of page views a month.
Employers added 61.
What was that?
That was, I was on the Star Tribune site.
Oh, they do it too.
You really got to get off that site, dude.
We got to talk to the Twin Cities Media. That's two Twin Cities Media outlets that have auto on.
Well, you know why they're doing it? They're doing it because if you keep an article open and then you go to something else, you click a link and you open up a new tab, they want you to pay attention to them. So that's why they're doing it. I got to tell you what, that's worse than clickbait as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, really. Yeah, so. That sucks. Well, I got a story about Amazon affiliate, Steve, that you would like. I was actually an affiliate going back to like 99 or something. And I was at a shop.org conference in New York City, I think it was. And one of the Amazon executives was speaking. And I forget who it was. Anyway, I was like number 1800 and something affiliate on Amazon. And I gave him some trouble. And I said, yeah, it's like, can't you guys ever do anything for us? It's like, we don't get a t-shirt or anything, you know? I mean, they never really communicated with us that I ever saw. And about a month or two later, a t-shirt showed up in my mail.
Oh, how funny.
And I still have the damn thing, you know? It's just, you know, I could wear, I don't think I ever wore it, you know? It's like, I could wear this thing that says I'm an Amazon affiliate, but I'm with you. I never got, you know, I never got a check. I don't even think I ever got a check that as big as what you got.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway,
I guess you have to reapply. I just signed into my closed affiliate account. It just says it's closed.
Yeah. Huh. Well, what more do you need to know?
I know.
It's because you haven't used it probably for 97 years.
No, they closed it a year ago, remember?
Yeah.
Oh.
So they closed everybody's. It's surprising that if you had one, why wouldn't they just reopen it?
They closed it for Minnesota, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Now it's back open. I guess I have to reapply, but
yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, hit them up for a t-shirt. You know, it's the least they can do.
No kidding. Hey, should we talk about what else is going on? I mean, there's some stuff with Microsoft and Apple. And one story that really hit me, which I thought was really great, was that Cloudflare, the company that runs a content delivery network and security stuff and really acts as a proxy server for lots and lots of sites. They've got a free plan and they've got a pro plan and all of that. They just announced Cloudflare Universal SSL. So for those listening, if you haven't set up a secure socket layer, a certificate on a web host, you know, you have to have a dedicated internet address, a dedicated IP for that. and then you have to buy their certificate and you have to install their certificate or buy it from the host for more money and have them do it. But it's not trivial. And then you've got to, you know, secure your page and make sure that there's not insecure stuff on it and blah, blah, blah. Well, because Cloudflare is a proxy server. They scan your whole site so they know what's secure and what's not. And now they're offering this universal SSL. So if you want to offer HTTPS security to all of your visitors on all of your pages, you can do it. Very, very trivially and inexpensively. And even if you're running on a cheap web host at a web hotel. So I thought this was, it's a nice direction. And partly it's because Google is just very, very slightly favoring SSL-based sites in their search results. Now, it's not dramatic. It's only a 1% to 2% increase in ranking. But they're going to slowly but surely swing the pendulum toward SSL-based sites. So this is going to be a big deal going forward. So yeah, I thought get that was that. Cool. Yeah.
Get on that.
And then Microsoft, what did they do?
They hurtled Windows over 10. They hurtled over 9 and went right to 10. Got to keep up with the Joneses,
That's
you know.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, they also have Mojo. They also have one of their desktop pictures, a screenshot of Yosemite that looks very much like OS X Yosemite's shot. I don't know if you saw that. Really?
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So I guess Windows 9 was so bad they decided not to release
it. Just skip right over it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
I read where something, where it maybe had something to do with Windows 95 or like that they'd already used.
Yeah. Oh. That's it, I'm sure.
Yeah, 95 and 98.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think the perception is, you know, here's what I've found really fascinating in all of our sites. And then in a lot that I look at the analytics for client sites, the pendulum really has swung toward Mac OS X and away from Windows in terms of preferred browsers and platforms for people coming into sites. It used to be overwhelmingly Windows and overwhelmingly Internet Explorer. And now on our site, for example, one of our main sites, 53% is Mac and something like, 36 or 38% is Windows, different flavors of Windows. And that's really continued to move in that direction over time. So it makes sense that they would name it Windows 10 so there could be parity with OS 10, 10.10.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
A lot of tents going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's going to get to 11 first is a question.
That is a question. But one of the things that they offered you guys, have you guys gone off and looked at Sway?
Yeah, what do you make of this? It's kind of an odd thing to add at this point.
Well, it is and it isn't. And here's why. There was an article that I was reading. I'll see if I can find a link and put it in the show notes. But there's an article about some of the leadership that Apple is taking with respect to HTML5. And the good thing about that is they're essentially setting up HTML5 delivery to be almost on parity with the mobile apps themselves. And I don't know enough about it from a development standpoint. Phil, you could probably weigh in more on this than I could, but that they're really moving in that direction. And as a consequence, HTML5 based delivery of content is really key. And that's the core of Sway. But also Adobe came out with this product called Adobe Voice, which allows you to do kind of the same thing if you're running an iPad or an Android tablet, where you can sort of assemble stuff, video and photos, and then add your voice, kind of do a voiceover through your device. And there's more and more of these sort of combinatorial communication software platforms that are coming to the fore. So I don't really see this as being a web application development or web site development tool as more of it is I want to present and communicate an idea. Because look at how powerful it's been on Kickstarter. Some of these videos, you read through the whole stuff, and if it was just text and pictures, you'd be like, whatever, I'm not going to donate. But then you look at a video, and I think our own local, formerly local Spark devices, their video really got people to sit up and take notice because it was so well done.
Yeah,
I think this, it matters. I think being media literate today is not just being critically thinking about media. It's being able to use media and assemble it and deliver it so you can communicate ideas and concepts and all of that. So,
yeah, I agree.
Well, so explain, as I look at Sway here, I'm trying to get my head around. Okay, so what exactly is it for?
Content aggregation and presentation.
Evernote?
Oh, yeah, no. Right. No. No,
oh,
but if
sorry.
You, no, but if you
what
want.
What was that? You know, when I remember Google used to have that front page you could put on your Google browser, your browser. What was that thing called? I can't even remember what that was. Is that sort of thing? Sort of aggregate a bunch of crap in one spot?
Well, it's that. But again, if you if you wanted to get across an idea to a client, for example,
Keynote.
Well, no, but it's more than Keynote. I mean, even though Keynote is the most awesome thing yet in terms of presentation, but this is even different than that. And because it's web-based, I mean, you can export a Keynote presentation as HTML. You can do that with PowerPoint too. But it's just essentially static slides. It's a slideshow. It's like, who cares? This is actually interactive
So it's Evernote.
No, it's not Evernote. Evernote's a place to collect stuff and search.
Oh, so
for
Sway,
it.
You don't collect stuff in Sway?
Oh, Phil, you know what? down this article, it says Microsoft has made available a YouTube video showing more about the way Sway works. I would encourage you after the podcast to go look at that video.
I guess what I'm trying to say is there really a need for this?
I think so.
Okay. I don't know. I'll have to see it. It seems a little odd to me.
Tim, why don't you and I meet for lunch? Watch the Sway video.
That's right. Yeah, we'll watch the video. And we'll still shake our heads and say,
really?
I don't get
need
it.
This? I don't, sorry, I don't understand.
I don't see it. Well, no.
Facebook? Is it Facebook? No, it's not Facebook.
No.
But you know what we need?
What do we need?
We need a 6-inch Nexus smartphone. That's what we need.
Yeah. Why, really? Why do we, with a 3200 mega amp battery?
Yeah, can you imagine? That thing's got a monster.
All right, segue, go ahead. Nice segue. By the way, we promised now that Phil has his iPhone 6 and mine finally arrived yesterday. You are the lone Android defender now, Tim.
Oh, no way. I disagree. I am an Android defender as well.
Phil is fine.
I know.
I am bi.
You're bi. Okay.
I go both
so
ways.
So tell us about the Nexus 6.
It's 5.9 inches. It's got an enormous battery. It's made by Motorola. If this is true, I find this a little odd from a naming perspective, because Nexus 6 was the replicant in Blade Runner.
Oh my God.
I'd totally forgotten that. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, can they really legally use Nexus 6 as a name?
Trade
I don't know.
Name, right.
Yeah. Mm. So it might be called the Nexus X because this is basically a slightly larger version of the Motorola. What do they call it? Moto X.
Yeah. But if they call it the Nexus X, people will call it the Nexus 10.
Yeah,
that's true. Well, they should call it the.
And they do have a Nexus 10 already.
They should just call it the Ridley Scott. Be done with it.
The Ridley.
They should just call it Nexus Ridley. Blade Runner Edition.
Yeah.
That would be good. But I don't know. This is bordering on the largest usable size, I think, from a smartphone perspective.
You know, I got my hands on a 6 Plus the other day, and it's not as hideously huge as I thought it was going to be. But it is, I mean, it's only big when you put it up against your head, you know, when you're trying to use it as a phone. It's really quite nice as a reader and a tablet of some kind. It's really, so this would be the same sort of thing. I think this would be very nice, a lot of real estate, but geez Louise.
Well, I ended up getting that Android phone. It's 5.7 inches.
Oh, yeah.
And it is a monster. It does have a 3200 milliamp battery, so it lasts literally 2 full days.
Wow.
Between the charges.
And do you have any idea how much radiation is leaking while it's in your pants pocket?
Quite a bit, but it is as big as you can get. In fact, I just got a case yesterday, and the case is too big to fit in your pants, although the phone fits there, barely.
Cargo pants.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, your cargo pants.
Cargo pants time. Yeah.
Try the Graham Ficken's line of cargo pants. So.
But it does change the way you use the phone because it is more like a tablet.
Yes.
And you know what? In all seriousness, because I've got this iPad mini, that's one of the reasons I did not go with the 6 Plus. Is I thought, you know what, I don't need, because I want more screen real estate than even the 6 Plus has on certain things that I do on this iPad mini. And
so you were talking about getting rid of your mini. Are you still going to hang on to it now?
Yeah, I am. Well, it's because I use apps like the new Transmit for iOS, which is an FTP application. And, you know, I can just do so much more on just a little bit more screen real estate than even the 6 Plus would have. That it just makes sense. If I'm going to carry something around, I'm going to carry around that. Hey, Tim, any idea on, is there any rumor on what this thing's going to be priced at?
I don't know, but the Nexus X or the Moto X is what, $300-$400 off contract. So I think this will be probably around $500, I would think.
That's just incredible.
Something like that. So it'll be an attractive price, I think.
Yeah. Wow.
So speaking of your iPad, I predict you're going to get a gold iPad next time.
You know, right? I have to tell you,
the Apple comes back. Okay, we'll see your Nexus 6 and we'll give you a gold iPad.
Yeah, they're going to add a gold option to Goose sales, according to Bloomberg, with a gold iPad, the next version.
I even
rolled my eyes over that one. It's like, wait a minute. It was at the top of techmeme.com. as an article, and I was like, seriously, this is the big news. I thought the bigger news was what John Pakowski from Recode put out about Apple's holding that iPad event on October 16th, which will also have rumored new iMacs and maybe a Mac Mini and OS X Yosemite. I thought that was a much bigger story than a gold iPad.
Well, absolutely. They moved it up from what people thought might be October 21st. I think was the date that had been kind of put out there. So,
right,
yeah, and they're doing it at the Cupertino campus, right?
Yep.
So it's not as big a deal as the last one, obviously.
Do you think they're going to do anything with iPod Touch?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know.
They really haven't done anything with that for a couple of years. So you'd think that they would at least maybe have a version that's like an iPhone 6 size, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they may also have decided, well, let's just, because most of the world has kind of abandoned the iPod in favor of moving it onto their phone. So moving music onto their phone, I don't know if it's, I don't know what their sales numbers are like on iPods anymore.
Well, yeah, the touch, I haven't read much about that lately. You wonder how our sales just sort of stagnant on that line or declining. That my guess would be declining, but I don't know.
Well, you know what I thought was interesting was the has to remain nameless client who is in the home healthcare space for seniors. And they had iPod touches that they had given to all the staffs. Because they had also installed a Wi-Fi router, or no, excuse me, not a Wi-Fi router, but a mobile router. And so, you know, it had low bandwidth and stuff, but it was enough for them to walk in and they were automatically had a handshake to the device in every single one of their clients' houses. So they were using an iPod Touch to communicate. Well, they've all gone Android now. Hmm. And they've gone Android because they can buy much better, much bigger devices for a lot less money. And they're looking at potentially moving to telephony as well with those. That's where I think that, you know, the iPod Touch space, I mean, it's really great, but unless they do something unique, can buy one of those blue BLU, Chinese phones, that's huge and running Jelly Bean and it's $350. That's pretty compelling.
Yeah, as opposed to maybe still, what, $299?
$299 for a
touch, which is a 4.7-inch screen maybe, right, at the most. Yeah. So they wanted more screen real estate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
Right. Yeah.
Well, the touch is still 4 inches. Is it?
Yeah.
It's okay. The iPhone 5 size.
Oh, that's right. That's just 4, isn't it? Hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, there could be a room for them to be upping the screen size on the touch. Then we shall see.
Yep. Well, there was a nice article. If you haven't read it yet, we'll put a link in the show notes to a Vogue piece on Apple's design genius, Johnny Ive.
Oh, genius.
I thought that was pretty interesting. More interesting, and I'll find this link too, is a generic video of all these clips of Johnny Ive from all these Apple videos that literally could be used for any product. I thought that was pretty funny. So
clips from what?
They basically did a compilation of little snippets from all of his Apple videos. Oh. And, you know, he could be describing any product, right? So
fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so. Well, the video they played at the last big Apple event, I thought was a really good one. I'm sure they took some clips from that of him the voiceover. For the watch. I mean, that was a pretty awesome video.
Do you really feel that there's a lot of excitement around the watch? Is anybody really jonesing about this watch? I don't feel it as quite as exciting. It's created quite as much stir as when the 360 K, the Moto 360 was first.
Oh boy, I don't
debuted.
Know.
Debuted. I don't know. Is it?
Or is it? Just I finally went into a Best Buy. The other day to get some K cups because they were on sale, and I saw the Moto 360 in the flesh and tried it, and it's actually a not bad looking. It's not enormous. It looks pretty usable, you know, and after having a phone that's almost, you know, that's nearly 6 inches large, pulling it out like the check status and whatever at the line at the store is a little more obnoxious now. So I don't do it as much. So having it on your wrist, I think, does make some level of sense.
I agree. But I think that circular form factor is a really big deal. I think that the square form factor is still going to put people off. It's too 80s Casio. I just don't think it's the thing to do.
Yep. Well, I think we're still a ways off from the excitement. I mean, you know, the excitement's definitely going to build as they get closer to actually shipping. I think there's been a lot of good stuff talked about what the watch, how it's going to change various industries or professions, and including medicine, you know. I mean, I've read a lot of exciting posts and outlooks for where things are going and how it's really going to change things.
No question. So, absolutely no
even
question.
Even Bill Gates coming out and saying it was fantastic and a real, you know, contribution. Did you see that? He was interviewed by, of course, what does he know, you know?
Yeah. Did he mention the spot watch?
The what?
The spot watch. Remember that?
No. What? Refresh our memory.
It was a Microsoft watch. It was like a 2000, 2001 time frame that ran on like FM radio frequencies. It would receive like weather reports and stock things and sports scores and whatnot. But it was a round, actually rather large, smartwatch. And of that era, never went anywhere.
What year would that have been?
I don't know. I'll have to look it up. I think it was early 2000s. So it was about a decade ago.
Wow. Microsoft was actually early on a trend.
Yeah, they've been early on everything.
I got to write this down.
No. No, they have been. I mean, they were early on.
Make a note of it.
They were early on tablets, too. They just didn't do it right.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
They tried.
So let's see. It was discontinued in 2008. Doesn't say what.
That long? It went 8 years?
I don't know. It doesn't say when it was released.
Hmm.
Did
it
you
buy it? It actually was released.
Did you buy?
No, I didn't. I remember reading about them at the time, and I thought, "What? This is kind of stupid. Why would anyone want something like this?"
This is kind of
geeks.
Stupid.
Geeks want weird things, you know.
So true. So true.
See, I have to tell you guys about something that has nothing to do with anything except, you know, thinking about all the stuff that's going on relative to watches and all of that. You know, if you have a MacBook Air, you don't have a lot of storage. Or if you have any laptop with an SSD in it, you don't have a lot of storage. And the company PNY, I'm over at Best Buy last night, in fact, and because there's a new store that opened in Eden Prairie called CPR, which is owned by some friends of mine, and they fix screens on phones and tablets, and
so it's not about cardiopulmonary resuscitation.
No, it's about cell phone repairs. How it started. But at any rate, so I go over to Best Buy and I'm just poking around looking at things, and they have a PNY Turbo 256 gig USB 3 flash drive for $105.
Mm.
And it is, the Turbo is, you know, the read write speeds are fast and all that. And of course, USB 3 is really fast. And, you know, it's funny because if you don't stay on top of this stuff, it's amazing how quickly things change in storage.
And with
all technology, of course. But you know, speaking of which, and the reason this is kind of a segue, but you know, this article that you put in here, Tim, about Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, you know, he's got Fusion IO and he's going to be presenting a demo.
I put that in there.
You did.
As an old demo guy, I just had to plug that in there.
Well, yeah. SanDisk bought Fusion IO for $1.1 billion, but you know, there are a lot of organizations now that are pitching their dedicated servers with SSD. And of course, there's a premium for that. But I've done a demo with one of them where I ported a site over for one of my clients. And oh my God, is it fast?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's almost instantaneous. And this is running on a dedicated server demo with 4 gigs of RAM. So it doesn't even have that much memory. And the site is using quite a bit of memory. But, The storage speed is just incredible.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if Woz has something storage related up his sleeve. No one knows. You know, they're going to break the big news on November 18th or whenever it is. What the heck is the date of it? Somewhere in the middle of the month of November.
I think it's Segway taxi service. It's an Uber for Segway.
Please.
No. Wow. You don't think so?
Who knows what he might come out with?
Well, let's crank through a couple of things here because we talked about that Bash update, you know, the program that runs last week, and Apple has released an OS X Bash update. So please update your machine.
When did this update come out?
It's been out. I think it came out Monday, maybe Tuesday.
Because the latest update I have on my machine is there was an OS X update on the 27th.
You know what?
Safari update waiting for me right now. I wonder if it's buried in that.
You know what?
I got one on the 4th.
And you know what? You have to go, this Bash update for Mavericks, you have to go and download. Now it'll be in Yosemite when it comes out. But that article that we linked to has a download button that actually will allow you to download the update.
Throw that link in there again, so we make sure that we get that.
Really, it wasn't in the 10.9.5 update.
10, yeah, which is I got the 27th. So,
oh, okay, I got it on the 4th. Okay, so I guess it wasn't on that. That's odd.
Nope.
Well, that's because Apple considers it to be pretty obscure with respect to the risk for Joe Average. The risk isn't that high. But I'll put a link in the show notes. I guess you got to go directly to Apple's page.
Yep.
I clicked that button and then I clicked again on the button and it turns out it's just the image. So they just did a screen grab
The bash update was released on the 29th, Tim.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I see that now on the security update page.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have a dedicated server and I checked the vulnerability and all that. I was trying to update and I couldn't update because of some things that they've done at the hosting level. And so I had to get tech support involved. Well, one of my clients did not update their server, same host and everything. And all of a sudden I get a notice that there's a malware issue because we run WordFence on a lot of the sites. And it turns out that every single domain he had on there, 22 domains, were compromised. And I was able to go in and manually remove all the files, but I still don't know how they got in. He had Bash updated there on his web host, but after that, but still, it's nasty stuff. We're under attack, guys. Oh my God.
You know, when I go on this to get this Bash update, I get my HTTPS gets shut off and it tells me it's not private. So it's kind of interesting.
Oh, really? I don't have that.
Very interesting. Wonder what's going on there.
Are you doing it with Safari or with Chrome?
With Chrome. Of course, you got to try Safari. Yeah, that's right.
Try Safari.
I always forget about that. You know, they do love to use their browser.
Yeah.
Indeed, they do. Well, with all this talk about security, do you got something for us, Steve?
Like a tip, perhaps?
Well, I might.
Really? How would we know?
Yeah.
Steve's security tip of the week.
I guess that's how we'd know.
Oh, my gosh. It is a security tip of the week. Well, so here's the tip.
Yar, matey.
Yeah, there's been something new for the Mac called mac.backdoor.iworm. And it's not really a worm. It's actually a Trojan, but it installs itself as part of pirated software. But there have been some other methods that have not yet been identified. But basically what it was doing was installing itself. It was going to a page at Reddit. It was pulling up servers that had the new attack stuff in it. And then it would send these machines out and infect, or these infected machines, and would send them out on denial of service attacks or sending spam emails and so on. And 17,000 Macs have already been identified as infected. And so it's not huge. It's not that alerting, but I just wanted to remind everybody of some steps because, you know, a lot of us in the Mac world think, there's no viruses or Trojans or worms for the Mac, which is not true, especially now that it's growing in popularity. So how do you avoid this one and future one? Well, stay away from pirate sites. Don't download torrents of applications that have been cracked and so on. But if you have kids...
Do you suppose we shouldn't watch that version of Downton Abbey that Steve just shared with all
of you? You don't have to worry about videos. AVIs, yes, but MP4s, no. Okay, so if you have kids using your or their own Macs, make certain that they're not set as an admin user and that you leave OS X's gatekeeper set for its default setting, which is Mac App Store and Identified Developers. So that's what comes out of the box, and if you haven't changed it in System Preferences under Security and Privacy, then you're fine. And then never enter your computer password when installing something from an untrusted source. And so even I've turned off the Mac App Store and Identified Developers because I download stuff from a lot of other places, but I run a little program that allows me to check the checksum signature to make sure that the file is fine before I run the thing. And that the actual people who created it are delivering the thing, and it's not a man in the middle attack making me think I'm at the right page and downloading the right file, which looks like the right file because it's the right file name. I want to check it to make sure. And so anyway, just be careful out there. That's my tip.
Good one.
Thank you, Steve.
What would we do without you? We'd be so...
We'd be vulnerable. That's what
we would be.
You'd be infected.
We would be infected.
We would be infected.
Indeed.
That's the word of the week.
Yeah. So let's
talk. But we're not going there. We are not going to the infection story.
No, we're not. No. Instead, we're going to talk about...
This is a high-tech podcast. Yep. We're not going there.
And we're going to talk about cool things of the week, which, of course, have to be high-tech. So, Phil, what is your cool thing, young man?
Well, just to say that, you know, I still keep my feet firmly planted in the Android camp. I am saying my cool tip of the week is Cyanogen, and the reason I focus.
Can you first say what Cyanogen is?
It's basically a way to root your Android to get rid of all the crap in your. It's just a cleaner version of the Android,
and people are loving
operating
it.
System, and people are loving it. I was particularly drawn to it, and actually, Tim helped me install it on my Evo a while back, and I just became a believer in it. I never updated my HTC One from the standpoint of trying to keep it consumer level for our designing and developing, but it's just so nice to get out from under all the bloatware that comes with the Android install for my company Sprint. So, the reason I kind of highlight Cyanogen this week is because they turned down money from Google.
A billion dollars.
I think that's because they wanted to keep it free and open. So,
Well, that's why I turned down $100 million from Innovate. Because I just, you know, I wanted to keep it open. And
well, clearly you didn't discuss that with us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a passion. Exactly.
It's a passion.
except the podcasting business is getting lucrative now.
It is.
That's what we understand. Somebody tell us how that works, could you?
Yeah, somebody please call in.
So anyway.
One thing about CyanogenMod is that on selected models of phones, they make it trivially easy to install.
Yes.
So, for instance, if you have a Nexus phone or if you have many of the Galaxy S phones from Samsung, you basically download an app from the Play Store, you run it on your mm-hmm. phone, you connect it to a Windows computer, and then you run a Windows app, and it does everything for you.
Wow. And of course, finding a Windows computer is always the tough part.
Yeah, I know. I had to dig one out of storage, but I set this up on an old Galaxy S3 that I used for a few days between my Nexus 4 and my new phone, and I set it up, did it. You reboot it like two or three times, and it updates, and it was running the latest version of Android. So, you know, this is a ROM that's been around for a long time, but it's always been based on the Android open source project, which is, you know, the direct from Google version of Android without their apps. But since most of the apps are available in the Play Store anyway, you can use CyanogenMod and then download all the Google apps that you want from Play. So it's nice. So it's very, very, very usable.
So that's my one cool thing.
That is cool.
And Mr. Tim, what's your cool thing?
Well, I've been looking to get into this quantified self fitness tracking thing, and I've been thinking that the Fitbit is probably the way to do it. But it's $100, and it's like you think, I don't know, is it worth $100? Yeah, it probably is, but I've never pulled the trigger on it. And this week I see this Misfit Flash, which is a $50 thing. Which actually looks better than a Fitbit because it's kind of a convertible deal. You can wear it like a watch, or you can wear it like a clip-on thing or on your keychain, and it does the same kind of Fitbit stuff of tracking your distance traveled, steps, your sleep, calories burned, all that good stuff. And then it connects to your Android or iOS device, so you can see all the charts and. It can integrate with other apps, presumably, but it's only $50. So,
and it uses Bluetooth Low Energy, and the battery life is up to 6 months.
I know it runs on one of those, those flat batteries that that hearing aids and a lot of digital watches run on. So,
very cool.
It looks like something to check out. So when they start shipping this later this month, I think I'm gonna get one of these things. And
are you gonna pre-order, or are you just gonna wait for it to come to retail?
Well, it looks like Best Buy has two of the colors. I'm just gonna get the black one, I think. So I'll probably just pre-order the darn thing. They say it's gonna start shipping this month. So
it's an impressive looking site. I'll say that
it's round. Did you notice?
Yeah,
it's round.
Yeah. It's round and it's waterproof. And you know what that means? It means Graham could go surfing in it.
Is it really good down to, you know, like when you duck dive and everything, or is it just water resistant?
No, it's waterproof to 30 meters.
30 meters, and believe me, if you fall and you get tossed under the waves, you're not going that deep.
I haven't gone down that far, but yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. I have a hard time seeing Tim in any of these poses that these the website shows these wearers.
I think the pink leotard.
Steve ideas.
I think pink leotard is the
Tim. Well, there we go. Now that's it, Steve.
No, I'm very much like this soccer guy going up there and kicking the ball.
Yeah, Steve. Yeah. This is it. This is the image you'll be using for the for the podcast. We have to super Tim's face into it somehow.
No. All right.
Perhaps him whipping his hair back.
All right, Mr. Thickens.
Yeah, well, I haven't gotten my iPhone 6 yet. I haven't had time, number one. I haven't even seen them. But by God, I ran across a Kickstarter that has me tempted to order up a case for it before I even get the dang phone. The trouble is, as with these Kickstarter deals, they aren't shipping for a few months, and they're claiming December. But you know how that goes with Kickstarter projects?
Maybe next year, yes.
This looks pretty cool. It's an iPhone case with an actual shutter button and interchangeable lenses that make photo taking easy, fun, and professional. And it looks pretty dang good. The photos are really, really nice. Haven't looked at the video yet, but I just literally discovered this morning. And being an active shooter with my phone, I'm thinking I just might spend $35 and take a chance and hope that I see this thing.
Well, I'll tell you, they had a $20,000 goal. They're already at 22,000 as of right now, and they got 25 days to go.
Yeah.
So this is going to be one of those. They'll probably raise 100 or more, 100K or more.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. And apparently it's some boys over in Taiwan. You know, they know how to jump on these new products and produce accessories for them.
It's interesting that we're on this quest to integrate the camera into our phone, and now there's a kind of industry that wants to make your phone more like a camera.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah.
Like, well, phone into a camera.
And they got these cool leather straps that you can attach to the case. So yeah, what the heck? $35. I don't even know if I can still buy it. Anyway, I like this. I like the looks of this. I just might do it.
All right,
Steve, what do you got?
Well,
Steve has just finished his order.
Yeah, right. I am. I'm gonna have to buy the Misfit and the Snap 6. Okay. Anyway, so for some time I've been goofing around with Uber Conference, and uberconference.com. It's a pretty interesting little app, and there's only two people that I have conferenced with out in San Francisco that use it, and nobody else I know uses Uber Conference. So that's kind of been a little bit of an issue, but the Uber Conference people did something new where they came out with a new web app and mobile app, switch.co, and it's for voice and for Google Apps users. And it's a way to, you know, get a phone number, and you can transfer calls, you can chat, you can do all sorts of things with your colleagues. And let me tell you that this is the one thing that is not trivial, is being able to transfer calls. So you can have a number that rings everybody's soft phone, for example, or rings everybody's iPhone, or Android phone, or computer. I mean, that kind of stuff is fairly easy, but if Graham, you're over in Bloomington, and Phil, you're down at Coco, and Tim, you're at your office in Lakeville, and the four of us are working on something, and I want to transfer a call to Phil, well, I mean, I just have to say, well, you know what, here, call this number, or, you know, call the main number and hit 2, and that'll transfer you to Phil. And they've made this really trivial, so it's pretty cool. So I've signed up for the beta of it. It's, $15 per user per month, which is very inexpensive for, for telephony. I've seen nothing about number porting, which is my big thing. You don't want to lose your number. And I've seen nothing on that yet, but you can port to Google Apps. So if you can use your Google Voice as the main number, maybe there's a way there. So I still have more investigation to do, but it looks very interesting. So that's my cool thing.
That is cool.
All Mr. right.
Telephony man.
Yeah, I kind of am, aren't I? So, all right. So the mobile shift, upcoming events. I've not heard of this one.
Well, this has been put together fairly recently, okay. And it's going to be on Thursday, October 9th. And they're trying to limit it to a intimate group of enterprise managers and execs to talk about marketing, sales, and customer service in the enterprise and how it's being affected by the shift to mobile. And that'll be at Open Book in Minneapolis if you qualify as the kind of attendee they're looking for.
Yep. Excellent.
Mm. Not that they're trying to be exclusive or anything.
No.
Well, they're, you know, they're yeah, but trying you know, to.
But the things that the enterprise wrestles with, mainly bring your own device, and then mobile device management and all of that. I mean, there are issues that most people in the mobile space don't have to deal with that they do.
Yeah.
You know, and then if I've let everybody bring their own device and we're provisioning those devices and all that, then what's my liability if somebody is on the job and they drop it? Do I have to buy them a new phone? I mean, there are all those kinds of things that are built into this too, that I know a lot of people would say, nah, I don't care about that. I'm not in that, but so who's going to WordUp, the WordPress event, on October 11th and 12th?
I'm sorry to say I won't be able to make it this year or so.
Okay.
No, nope, I'm not either.
Yeah.
So I guess it's only you, Phil.
Steve's going to go.
Steve's going to go.
Yeah.
And then Product Camp overlaps that on one of those days. Saturday, October 11th at the University of St. Thomas downtown Minneapolis. That's always a good event for any folks in the product management arena, product development arena. That event in the past has attracted a lot of people, like a few hundred. It's a very well-run event. So I would recommend that.
And then what else? We pretty much covered pretty much everything else, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Mm-hmm. You know, big events are, you know, MIMA is coming up and Mobile Twin Cities is coming up. And we got all sorts of stuff.
Well, the Midwest Mobile Summit at Cocoa Uptown on the 23rd hasn't been widely promoted yet. And
that's right.
I don't believe the Eventbrite link is up yet, unless that changed in the last day. But that will probably attract a couple hundred people, I would think, if they get to promoting it. I'm supposed to be moderating a panel.
That's right. You're actually speaking there, aren't you?
Yes, I'm supposed to be moderating a panel on undertaking a mobile project within the enterprise. And I think we're going to have a couple of folks from local Fortune 500s, Medtronic and one other company who's escapes me right now. There'll hopefully be three panelists on that one.
Great. All right. I think that pretty much recaps it.
There it is.
Yeah.
Good.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
See you next week.
On
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Thanks,
guys. Go out and enjoy winter today now.